News, sports, weather from Dr. Bill Williams, traffic info from Kane, and one of the Gulf Coast's most familiar voices. It's Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and Dalton Arwig.
Good morning from Dan and Dalton and Mobile Mornings at 7 minutes after 8 o'clock. What's the aroma that the text line is lighting up about that should be the aroma for the state of Alabama?
Yeah, because, you know, New Mexico, this fifth grade class kind of got this started over there, like the official state aroma of New Mexico. And I think they said theirs would be cooking green chilies during the fall, or I don't know, something like that. So
something they do there that it makes sense in that state.
It's a world away, okay, yeah. In New Mexico. But I asked, you know, what should be Alabama's state aroma? And plenty of you answered on the Ascension Technologies text line at 3430106.
Love it.
And the common answer so far, Kaneka sausage.
That makes sense.
Yeah, Hal says Kaneka sausage on the grill. Keith says smoked pork. Tony Ann, Kaneka sausage. Larry and Atmore says Kaneka sausage. I'm fond of Monroe sausage. We'll have to have them fight it out sometime.
Oh, yeah, I'd like that too.
Todd from Grand Bay says the smell of burning leaves. Art says magnolia. Like the whole grove or just the individual flower, that would make sense either way. Daniel says in Mobile it would be gunpowder. Hey, Daniel, not funny. Okay, kind of funny. And so there you go. A lot of people saying right now it appears the favorite for Alabama's state aroma would be Kaneka sausage. I was thinking paper mill because it seemed like every single day of my life growing up near Jackson smelled like paper mill in the morning. And I really grew to like that smell as bad as it smells to a lot of people.
You are kidding.
No, I kind of like it. I don't know why, but I do.
I don't know why either.
You said Virginia Street, or what was that?
If you're on I-10, okay, and just say you're heading toward the tunnel, to your right, there's a Virginia Street exit, and there is stuff going on the waterfront there. I don't know exactly what it is. I don't know if it's something being manufactured or if it's the where all of Mobile's poop goes. But there's something right there that I visited one time, and we looked at each other. We went as a radio promotion, and it was like, this office is never going to win again.
Stuck with you.
Oh, it stuck with me. That was maybe 10 years ago. But now, what's different is, at that time, it seemed to be contained. You didn't smell it on the interstate. Now I can smell it on, you know, windows up.
Yeah,
too.
Yeah.
So anyway, any explanations of that putrid smell off of Virginia Street, let me know.
I was expecting more people to, endorse some of the bad smells of Alabama to be the state smell. But you guys are taking this, Philip says pine should be the state aroma for Alabama. John says Hill and Brooks coffee. Smells. Mm. Okay. So that's some good ones. And keep them coming throughout this hour. 3430106, the state aroma. Let us know on the Ascension Technologies text line what you think it should be.
Sounds good. So 10 minutes after 8 o'clock on FM Talk 106.5. That line also is the phone line, too, if you want to call 251-343-0106.
Yeah, and you'll want to keep that number because later this hour we'll be giving away a pair of tickets for James Taylor.
Right.
He and his all-star band will be playing at the Wharf in the middle of June. So keep that number handy, 3430106, and we'll do that later.
You asked about James Taylor. Does he just sit on a stool and play? And I think he kind of does. And he's older now than even the last time, I don't know, maybe 2010 saw him in Pensacola.
He is older. He
also,
that's right.
He's older. You know. So, okay, look, if you have a math problem, I'm the guy. Come to me. But that all-star band that they say he plays with, they are really an all-star. They're really good, really great, tight band. And I think it's the same people that he's been playing with since, same backup singers, same everything, since maybe around 1980. And so that is part of the attraction.
That'll be great. Again, we'll give those tickets away before you can buy them on Friday at Ticketmaster.com. So we do have some state stuff we'll get into. Also, words out that Democrats aren't necessarily pleased with how Vice President Kamala Harris has been doing her job, so they're looking elsewhere for a potential 2024 running mate for Biden, possibly.
And Hillary even commented on Kamala, huh?
Even
of
Hillary.
Of all people.
Yeah, so we'll get into that and also some state news, but right now this discussion's still kind of centering around China, and we don't have to get into the balloon much more. I think that's kind of been discussed about as much as possible, but the story I had this morning from a report from Georgetown, from Georgetown University, their Center for Security and Emerging Technology, They say we have a major problem, and that is how much money U.S. firms are pumping into Chinese tech companies, and especially with a potential, you know, showdown between the U.S. and China in the coming years over Taiwan, that cyberspace is kind of the next frontier for that kind of war. And if we are pumping billions and billions of dollars into Chinese artificial intelligence technology, what does that mean for that potential conflict in the future? They specifically point to a few firms, Intel and Qualcomm, two multinational semiconductor giants that are headquartered in California. Also, GGV Capital, a global venture capital firm also based in California, make up a huge number of these investments into Chinese AI companies between 2015 and 2021. Collectively, the report says, observed transactions involving U.S. investors totaled over $40 billion into 251 Chinese AI companies, accounting for 37% of the $110 billion raised by all Chinese AI companies. And of course, we're talking about China here.
So they don't have. It's not a free and open economy. That money is getting pumped right in back into the Communist Party.
Right into the Communist Party, and they're using that for their military abilities and also their ability to spy on their own citizens, of course, under the dictatorship.
Oh, they got balloons all over the place over there, probably.
Yeah, no doubt about that. So there is, I guess, the Biden administration is talking about in the coming months issuing an executive order, because that's what we do in America these days. Congress never acts. Mm-hmm. You're going to depend on the president to make an executive order that would ban U.S. investments in Chinese tech industries. I don't know why the Congress couldn't put something like that together. I mean, as they're grasping for bipartisan issues, that should be one that everyone or most people can agree on, that we need to stop sending so much money over there. But they are expecting an executive order from the Biden administration in the next few months, and also for America to work even more closely with India. Their economy is growing so fast in India, so quickly, and they're going to specifically focus on three separate but often overlapping areas: the military sector, semiconductor manufacturing, and, of course, artificial intelligence. But that report from Georgetown, not good news. American companies pumping tons of money into the Chinese party.
So the idea would be, instead of China, India.
Working with India, who, of course, can't stand China.
Yeah, but anyway, whatever happened to the old U.S. of A?
Mm-hmm.
And so here's a quick little timeline on how all this happened. I was looking at this article the other day about America's dependence on China, especially when it comes to the semiconductors and all that. But it started out, believe it or not, Richard Nixon, early 70s, and they were kind of throwing China some crumbs business-wise. And the idea was that China's middle class would grow, overthrow the Communist Party.
Mm.
Well, that was what experts believed. Obviously, that never happened. Then the Cold War ended, and labor was kicked to the curb. It all went abroad in the late 80s and 90s. Japan played a big role in the 80s. Remember all the things that were made in Japan? Or you may not recall that.
Yeah.
It seemed like Japan. Well, look at the names of the products.
I have one of their TVs
there
in my house right now, Sony.
So shout out to Sony. But anyway, so that was the 80s and 90s where Japan, and then China also began to get some business away. Now, at the World Economic Forum, they rolled out the red carpet. This is in 2017, so just 6 years ago. They kind of rolled out the red carpet for Xi Jinping and also took a swipe at kind of a veiled swipe at Donald tariff man Trump. Trump was talking tariffs all the time.
Yeah, had the trade war.
Right. So anyway, corporate America traded on the stock exchange. And the easiest way to, of course, to cut costs, cut jobs. Well, China's sitting over there saying, hey, you know, we're here. We're ready to go to work for you. And we took the bait. It started out with little trinket kind of stuff, right? You'd see cheap stuff made in China,
mm-hmm.
and you're thinking, you know, made in China was almost a joke,
right?
Like it's terrible, it's cheap, it smells, whatever. It's not a joke anymore, obviously, from your story. Then consumer electronics followed, and now we're at where we're at. And
not coming back either.
Probably not coming back or anytime soon. So M. Foresight, this is an industry think tank, they wrote about this. Check this out. Across multiple industries, the U.S. has lost its industrial commons, the collective research and development, engineering, and manufacturing capabilities that sustain innovation in physical products. outsourcing production over multiple decades has left the country without the means or ability to innovate, let alone produce the next generation of high technology products. So it's almost like if you're working out all the time and then you stop using those muscles, now you can't even, I mean, we're so far behind now, according to that paper, we've kind of lost our way. We've given so much of the, even the research and development to China, that we're not even that good at that anymore.
Right. Well, I mean, it's obvious just looking at so many towns around America that used to have, you know, factories would hold up certain towns. I mean, sure, everyone worked there, or most people did. Yep. And while it wasn't always the most glorious work,
You had a job.
I have family members that, you know, they worked at the same plant for decades, yep, and then retired at what now is looking like a relatively early age, you know, retire by 60, 65 after working at this factory for so long, and then they've got these retirement benefits all the way through. I mean, just look at Detroit and some of these other places now where those jobs have completely gone away, and it came at the, you know, prices were lower because we were getting this cheap labor from China, mm-hmm, of course. So that was one benefit, but we've lost all of those jobs, and then, like you said, the ability to fire it back up when needed. And that's kind of how Trump, like the Trump faction of the party, and also another big portion of the conservative party, where they kind of split, right? Because Trump was more of a populist in some of those senses, where he got a lot of the union vote. And it's interesting now, even looking at the unions and how they used to fight against mass immigration into the U.S. because that meant jobs going for their union, yes, members were leaving.
Right.
But now they're looking at the big dollar signs with possibly more union members coming from, you know, South America through the border. But what Trump would do, he wanted to bring those jobs back to America, and that probably and would increase the prices of those goods because you're going to have to pay more for American labor.
But
then you look at so many of these other conservatives who are fine with the immigration, and they want that cheap labor to continue because
they're fine with jobs overseas, even in China.
Yeah, because that means lower prices for a lot of those goods. So that's another one of these major splits, even within the Republican Party. But there's no doubt about it that how we've set everything up with China and how interlocked we are with their economy. Like Sean said, you know, he said it on Midday Mobile several times, but Russia is one thing. We get fuel from Russia, yeah, and several other things, and putting these heavy tariffs and penalties on them is one thing. But if we did the same to China, that would have major repercussions for our own economy.
Yeah, Russia's like the dumb neighbor you put up with. Hey, Harry,
yeah, you
know, not all there, right?
Yeah,
but he serves a purpose of some sort. Yeah, China's a completely different animal for sure, and they seem to have us over a barrel right now in a lot of ways. What now? What now, text line? Let us know.
Yeah, and we also have a lot more state official aroma candidates from you on the text line. We'll get into those and a whole lot more when we get back on Mobile Mornings.
19, well, let's call it 20 after right now. FM Talk 106.5, Dan and Dalton. Text line, of course, the Ascension Technologies text line is 251-343-0106. Boy, I rail about people who got in accidents in the tunnel or on the bayway, if they're not paying attention. And of course, I got in an accident in the tunnel.
Yeah.
Changed my narrative a little bit. 825 FM Talk 106.5. Have we completely cracked the case on the what smells off Virginia Street?
Yeah, on what you're smelling.
What everybody's smelling. It's not just me, I would think.
So the state aroma, the official aroma,
yes,
of Alabama. That's
back
what
to
we're
that
wondering. And Dan brought up the smell on Virginia Street.
Yeah, I'm not nominating for the state aroma, by the way.
No, you're just mentioning.
Yeah.
That is certainly an aroma. And let's see here. So TK, well, I can't read TK's on the air. Just because it would make me laugh a little too hard. But he's saying there is a wastewater treatment plant at the end of Yean Street. And so Trey's saying the same thing. Sewer treatment plant down there off Virginia over by the coal terminal. And Philip with a different take. He says what Dan is smelling is low tide on the bay with an east wind that exposes decaying plants and crustaceans to air. It's quite potent, he says.
Yeah, he's describing some sort of a natural awful smell, which I guess could play a role in it, but I kind of think I know what it is.
A couple other candidates here. This unnamed texter says the state aroma for watermelon. You know, in the Orwig household, I'm proud to tell you that at least one of my children is absolutely in love with watermelon.
That's good.
Which is good news for me.
Yeah.
I love some watermelon also. And let's see here. Another texter says, let's see. Having trouble with the text line here. James says Oil Recovery Company off Virginia Street. Might have been what you were smelling, Dan. And back to the China thing. So Hal says, don't forget Bob Dole was an early lobbyist for Chinese companies. Fire Dog says, if Russia is the crazy neighbor, then China is the Pritchard Water Board. Joel says, China has us right where they want us. They don't care about us or what we think. And another texter says, China is like the pushy president of the new HOA. So some of your texts this morning on the Essential Technologies text line, 251-343-0106. And it will be interesting tonight, although interesting may be a bridge too far for Biden's second State of the Union address. What will he say about China? Will he even, you know, talk about the balloon and that controversy from over the weekend? Or will he talk about our relationship with China? You know that he's going to talk about the war in Ukraine, right? That'll for sure be part of it.
Do we know how long this presentation is going to be? Do they all know in advance, like 40 minutes or something like that?
When was the last time a State of the Union address was less than an hour long? Mm. I feel like an hour is the starting point.
Yeah, but it's a very old president.
It is.
I mean, you know, he's only got so much in the tank at any given appearance.
But he also gets very long breaks because, as Congress likes to do, they'll clap every 5 seconds, which is, they turn a 10-minute speech into a good hour 20 just because they're clapping every 5 minutes.
Yeah.
It gets a little old. I don't have to tell you guys that.
How about there'd be McCarthy behind him now, not Pelosi?
Well, that's, some people were saying, will McCarthy wait until the end of the speech and then tear his copy in half? Remember when Pelosi did that during the Trump speech?
She did it one time, right?
Yes.
One time, yeah.
Yeah, and then she did the,
I don't think he's gonna do that.
The sarcastic clap there behind Trump as he was giving his speech. So it'll be interesting to see what Biden decides to talk about tonight, I guess. But new poll out as far as aid to Ukraine, and two-thirds, 65% of Americans say they would like to see the U.S. keep boosting Ukraine against Russia. 31%, this is all from a Gallup poll that came out yesterday, 31% say they'd prefer if the U.S. helped to end the war quickly, even if it meant Russia held on to Ukrainian territory. So it's proven that the aid to Ukraine is a popular policy for the Biden administration, so I expect them to talk about that quite a bit. But even that will be partisan tonight. In that same poll, 81% of members of the Democrats said they want U.S. to continue to offer prolonged support to Kiev, compared to 53% of GOP voters and 59% of independent voters. So I imagine he'll be talking about that quite a bit tonight.
Yeah. Does he touch the balloon? Does he talk about, you know, how much about Ukraine does he talk about? And what, he's got to talk about successes. So where would they be? What can he brag about?
Right. Well, he's going to find quite a bit to brag about, I'm sure, during that hour and however long speech.
Yeah.
And one of the people behind him, Kamala Harris, catching some strays from the New York Times and members of her own party.
Yes.
Yesterday, we'll talk about that. Also, a near catastrophic plane accident. Another one. 2 months in a row now.
Morning from Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5 at 8:35.
Yeah, right now your chance to win a pair of tickets before you can buy them for an evening with James Taylor and his all-star band. They'll be playing at the Wharf Amphitheater June 15th. And caller number 4 at 251-343-0106. Today's pair of tickets will go to you. Caller number 4, 251-343-0106. You can join Cindy, who won yesterday. And we'll keep giving these away all week right here on Mobile Mornings. Tickets actually go on sale Friday. It's the 10th of February, 10 a.m. at Ticketmaster.com or on the Wharf box office. But right now, caller number 4 picking up a pair of tickets for that June 15th show with James Taylor.
All right, cool. Good luck. We'll be giving away tickets all week long on Mobile Mornings. Going to the Ascension Technologies text line, your local technologies expert. This is Dale, who says, So number one, Trump warned us on China. Number two, Trump warned us about Biden was bought and paid for by China. Number three, virus escapes from China's lab, paid for by the deep state. Number four, virus is used to cheat in multiple states, giving the executive branch the bought and paid for Biden. Number five, China wages economic and currency war on U.S. when bought and paid for installed President Biden takes office. Number six, China floats a balloon to say, ha ha, we own you. Number seven, Trump saying, I told you so. That on the Ascension Technologies text line. We appreciate all your texts and your calls as well.
Yeah, we sure do. And, you know, we've seen this happening a lot lately. Manufacturing plants going up in flames around America. And it's one of the common things I've been hearing from people who act like they're in the know at the very least is that we had all these geniuses in years past, you know, build up our infrastructure, and we have these factories that were just running so smoothly back in the day, and now a lot of those great minds just aren't around anymore, and they're saying that that is why we're seeing so much of our infrastructure kind of start to crumble, right? And for the longest time, I mean, we never heard about domestic planes, especially those that involve people in the planes, you know, flying from place to place, being in nearly fatal accidents. But now twice over the last 2 months, there have been some extremely close calls where at the very least dozens of Americans would have been killed if these planes had actually collided. And it happened again. So it happened last month at JFK, a flight with Delta and an American Airlines flight. They almost collided
now
on the runway.
Now, these are on the ground, yes, okay.
Yeah, that was the Delta flight was a Boeing 737, 145 passengers, six crew members. The American Airlines Boeing 777 was carrying 137 passengers and 14 crew members. Delta stopped 1,000 feet from where the American Airlines plane had crossed on the adjacent taxiway. Mm. So that was almost like a... at an intersection,
like a
they almost collided.
Yeah.
Well, Saturday morning, it nearly happened again, and it was a FedEx plane that was landing in Texas. This was at the Austin International Airport. So a FedEx plane from Memphis, you know, the hub of FedEx, was landing there in Austin. At the same time, on that same runway, a Southwest flight with passengers was getting ready to take off. And if you see, like, during a football game, you know, they show the dots on the field. They did that with these planes, and the FedEx flight was nearly on top of the Southwest flight at the same time. I guess they got within 75 feet of each other.
Wow.
And actually some audio from that right here with here's the plane audio, and they – the pilots actually sound incredibly calm and collected for how catastrophic this almost was.
Southwest abort. FedEx is on the go.
Southwest 708, roger. You can turn right when able.
Negative.
Southwest 708, you can turn left heading 170.
170,
170. Yeah, so if you were just listening to that audio, you would have no idea that you know, dozens of people were almost killed by this FedEx plane landing on top of this Southwest plane. So they are the FAA is looking into this. They've opened an investigation. But I found this incredibly interesting because as that news was coming out Saturday, there's a competing headline from Wall Street Journal, Southwest Airlines to reduce minimum requirements for aspiring pilots.
Mm.
So you have this incredibly close call Saturday morning in Austin. And on February 4th, so that would have been what? I guess that same day, Saturday, Southwest is reducing the number of hours prospective pilots must have spent flying jets and other turbine-powered aircraft as the carrier looks to increase hiring. So no doubt Southwest has had like the worst years here over the last several months.
Yeah, in really a bad year, and also in terms of public relations, right? Because it's all been, they've been caught at every misstep, and they are so far behind on their technology. It's like embarrassing. Mm-hmm. You can't imagine that's not the first thing they're addressing.
Yeah, so earlier you were talking about us exporting a lot of our cheap labor to China, a lot of the goods we get from China, but also I think there's been a bit of a brain drain here in America. And some of that is people coming to America to learn mm-hmm. and then leaving.
Taking it with them.
And taking those minds with them. They said Southwest has had required applicants to have spent at least 1,000 hours flying such aircraft and will now consider pilots with less of that type of experience, and said it would list 500 hours of turbine time as a preferred qualification. It's set to go into effect today, according to a message the airline sent to pilots this week. They cited an increased demand for highly qualified pilots across the industry, and with a potentially wider pool of applicants, Southwest said the change will allow it to remain selective in who they hire. But how do you feel about that? The same time Southwest is saying they're going to basically cut in half the amount of hours, the amount of airtime required for their pilots, you have this other story where a Southwest plane taking off in Austin was nearly hit by a FedEx plane that was landing on the same runway. Unbelievable.
Southwest also applauded the Chinese balloon. They couldn't believe that thing could get from Montana to South Carolina so quickly.
Yeah.
They're like, why can't we do that? Bravo. Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5. This text line is lighting up, Dalton.
Yeah, it is lit up. Sean says, do you have to wear a mask to see James Taylor? I don't know, Sean. I'm not sure on that. I would doubt it with it being out at the wharf. Another says, I saw James Taylor in the early 90s. He was old then. I reckon he's even older now. He's got some classics, though. And Dan, you were talking about his band being so good. That might be one that I have to check out, is James Taylor playing there at the wharf.
They're just tight. They're really it sounds like the album. You know, it sounds like the songs you hear on the whatever. They're really good.
As far as the airline thing, King of All Unnamed Texter says humans are getting more stupider. See what you did there,
yeah.
King of Unnamed Texter. Gardner says air controllers were hired by equity standards, and that should be all that matters. Is this a DEI thing? Is that why we have been having closer calls at our airports? That's a good question. Pat says that's not on the pilot. That's on traffic control. Art says 17 years as an air traffic controller. By the way, God bless you, Art. That's like one of the most high-pressure jobs you could have. He said, I can tell you flat out that was the fault of the air traffic controllers between the Southwest and Delta.
Mm.
Leo says, referencing airline pilots, diversity is our strength. They've made that pretty clear, certainly over the last few years. And then Larry says, while it's concerning about Southwest lowering the standards for pilots, we need to look at the air traffic controllers and their requirements, as planes taking off and landing are under their jurisdictions and the FAA, or maybe FAA. So with that one from last month, too, where you had the one plane crossing in front of the other at JFK, I guess that would have been on air traffic control also, as they were taxiing.
Yeah, I think, yeah, most of that. I mean, I guess if you're a pilot, you only make a move after you've been instructed it's okay to do so. I would love to hear at least one. Is that Art? Yeah, Art was 17 years as an air traffic controller. Hit us with back on the text line, Art, with just maybe one little nugget, one little harrowing story from your time at air traffic control where things could have gone wrong or did go wrong, or because that, you're right, Dalton, that has for a long time been considered one of the more high-stress jobs out there. Was it during whose administration that the air traffic controllers were
going on
strike and the president did not permit that? That might have been one of the Bushes. I don't remember.
Well, it came close to happening again. I think just last year they were talking about going on strike. So, that would leave us in a bit of a lurch, right, if we lost air traffic control.
It really would. I guess you're right about last year, but one that was even a bigger problem a few years back. 8:45, Dan and Dalton. Morning from Dan Brennan, Dalton Orwig, FM Talk 106.5, 850. Our show is Mobile Mornings. Thank you for listening.
Hey, congratulations to Nicole. Today's winner for a pair of tickets to see James Taylor and his all-star band live at the Wharf June 15th. Again, those tickets go on sale Friday at 10 a.m. at Ticketmaster.com. You can buy them straight from the Wharf box office. And we've got three more pairs of those tickets we'll be giving away throughout the rest of the week. So make sure you listen to Mobile Mornings for your chance to win those. And on the text line, a lot of folks pointing out that air traffic controller strike back in 81 during years of Reagan.
So I knew it was very dramatic. I did not remember this. 13,000 air traffic controllers went on strike, and after, you know, negotiations didn't go well, and by in a couple of days after that, President Ronald Reagan carried out his threat and fired over 11,000 air traffic controllers who had not returned to work. He wanted them back in 2 days or so. Wow, what a showdown. And I knew it sounded more drama than, oh, they might go on strike. In 1981, Ronald Reagan, and now it's all coming back to me. But the fact that he fired 11,000 air traffic controllers, wow.
Yeah, C.B. Carl says his cousin was one who lost his job of those air traffic controllers. Mm. And Tusker said, all this plane talk, he said, it's why I don't fly. Yeah, I'm becoming more and more, the more I read these stories, I'm becoming more like John Madden, who was like deathly afraid of getting up in the air.
Well, get a big RV.
That's all I need.
Yeah.
A big Prevost RV. Just take it everywhere I go.
They cost almost nothing.
That's what I hear, right?
Yeah.
Jeff Porcho on the way, and he's got some great guests coming up today.
He does have a good guest lineup.
He'll actually get it started in the 9 o'clock hour. Alabama Attorney General Steve Marshall. And then in hour number two, Thomas Gavan with the Criminal Appeals Court GOP candidate. And then at right around 10:30 this morning, Senator Katie Britt will be on with Jeff. And then in the 11 o'clock hour, Matt Philbin with the Media Research Center. And, of course, Jeff does such a great job of telling you what's going on in Montgomery. And I'm sure he'll be taking some time next month to make it up there for the parts of the legislative session once they begin that next month. There have already been, right around, I want to say 16 pre-filed bills for this upcoming legislative session in Montgomery. Some make a lot of sense, and some of them you're kind of like, what? Does that actually even have a chance of passing? The first one that was pre-filed this year is actually from the office of Representative Matt Simpson over in Daphne.
Yep.
To establish mandatory minimums for possession of fentanyl. I imagine that one, even though Republicans make up such a hefty portion of Congress in Montgomery that this would be just about bipartisan. Maybe everyone would vote for it.
You would think, and by the way, this is one of those situations where the drug has kind of outrun the law, right?
But yeah.
Fentanyl wasn't considered, well, it wasn't really, it's so newly on the scene.
Yeah.
We're not taking care of these people in the courts like we should.
So this would, if House Bill 1 passes, creates mandatory minimum sentences for individuals convicted of possessing amounts of fentanyl that illustrate an intent to distribute. The mandatory minimums would be 3 years for possession of 1 to 2 grams, 10 years for 2 to 4 grams, 25 years for 4 to 8 grams, and then life in prison for more than 8 grams of fentanyl. And Simpson said that is a higher priority going into the session.
Quick thought on that. We're letting people out of the prisons right now because there's overcrowding. We're, you know, DOJ's up our butt about this, and I guess they should be. These laws, with this much fentanyl on the streets right now, are going
to
have a lot of people tossed where?
Yeah, where would they put them? Maybe in a brand new prison that who knows when that'll get built.
No kidding.
House Bill 2 from Representative Arnold Mooney requires an ignition interlock during a diversion program. So it would extend the current law. That's already one where an ignition interlock is to be installed on an individual's vehicle for 6 months or throughout the duration of a pretrial diversion program for someone who's been charged with DUI. And that one is that law is sunsetting in July, so they're going to extend that. Democrat Representative Rolanda Hollis filed House Bill 3. It would prohibit smoking in a vehicle when a child 14 years of age or younger is present and punishable by a fine of up to $100. House Bill 4 from Representative Prince Chestnut out of Selma prohibits mandatory microchipping of employees. We actually talked about that one a little bit last week. Mm-hmm. I guess more and more companies across the United States are microchipping their employees, but not just like by volunteering. It's like a mandatory condition of employment. It said it's in response to one Wisconsin company who had employees voluntarily microchipped. So I don't know if anyone out there is actually making it mandatory. But I guess Representative Chestnut trying to get ahead of that one. House Bill 5 would establish a Alabama Peace Officers Memorial Day. The National Day of Observance is May 15th, and this would allow for a memorial ceremony to take place on the south lawn of the state capitol on that same day, and then counties and municipalities could decide whether or not they observe that holiday. House Bill 6 would establish parental rights as fundamental rights that can't be taken away without compelling reason to do so. House Bill 7, prefiled by Representative Ed Oliver out of Dadeville, bans divisive concepts in certain public settings. So these last two, kind of in the same vein as what DeSantis has been doing over in Florida.
Parental control over what their kids are going to learn in school.
Exactly. House Bill 8 would restrict the use of cell phones while operating a motor vehicle. Alabama law currently prohibits individuals from using a wireless communications device to write, send, or read a text-based message, and that would take it a step further by also prohibiting drivers from watching, viewing, recording, or capturing a photograph while operating in the car. So if you see that hilarious bumper sticker, you won't be allowed to take a picture of it while you're sitting in the car if House Bill 8 were to pass.
I've only done that at a red light and maybe a time or two, but okay.
Here's one. So Senate Bill 2, prefiled by April Weaver. This reminds me of the Blake Shelton song, Old Red. It prohibits inmates from participating in the training of tracking dogs. SB 2.
That's the Old Red Bill.
It is the Old Red Bill, exactly. Yeah. Senate Bill 2 prohibits incarcerated individuals from participating in any program in which dogs are trained to recognize scents or track humans. How about Bay Minette? Senate Bills 3 and 4 would change the corporate limits of Bay Minette. So that's a very localized couple of bills there. Senate Bill 5 would require Board of Pardons and Paroles to establish a women's residential transition center for those that are, I guess, leaving the Board of Pardons and Paroles. Senate Bill 6 would, it regards local land bank authorities, kind of a boring one there. And then Senate Bill 7, the postponement of mandatory supervised release of inmates, that the most recent prefiled bill, of course, coming from State Senator Chris Elliott. And this all on the heels of the announcement last weekend that they'd be releasing nearly 400 inmates, according to a 2021 bill that was passed by the legislature. Chris Elliott wants to push that release back to 2030.
So again, it seems simple enough that if fentanyl is a problem on the street or you have whatever problem is on the street, you want to take care of it and you want to make the sentences a lot tougher on those who get caught, prosecuted, and found guilty. That's all well and good. But we're letting inmates out. We've got there's a failure in the very first new prison they're trying to build up in near Prattville, I believe, where they had to stop construction there.
Yeah.
Some underwater spring on the land or whatever. I mean, we're not off to a good start.
No.
And this is something that Jeff's talked about forever. You know, you can start talking about the problem with Alabama prisons, and the conversation nearly has no end. Because, like, everything is failing in Alabama prisons, and you can go on and on. So, again, I get it. Fentanyl's a big problem. But what do we do when the prosecutor on Jeff's show the other day said, I prosecute, you put them away. The fact that we don't have the
means to put them away?
Or the place to put them ain't my fault, right? She had made that statement on Jeff's show the other day.
Yeah, it's something that's going to be discussed a whole lot over the next month and a half, and I'm sure following that as well. Prisons, as you could tell from a lot of these pre-filed bills, and prisoners make up a whole lot of the brain wavelengths there from those that are headed to Montgomery.
859 FM Talk 106.5, Dan and Dalton. We'll do it all over again tomorrow starting at 6 a.m. Jeff Poor is next.